This is Geeks and Jocks. Welcome back to Geeks and Jocks, episode 192, recording April 27th, 2024. This is Ryan Zlova, glad to have you here. Before getting into this episode, this podcast is on podcasters.spotify.com. You can also find this on Radio Public and Google Podcasts. So head on down to those places, search for Geeks and Jocks, plenty of content awaits. Definitely got some interesting things to look at with sports, including a crazy ejection this past week for baseball. Talk some gaming a little bit regarding potential like copyrights and things like that, and a few other things. So anyway, and the usual stuff, obviously, like movies and a few other things. So without further ado, let's jump right to it and start looking via boxofficemojo.com for what was doing well in the repeat at number one. Will definitely be a bit surprising. And this was an interesting weekend, to say the least, because the top four were all within like 11 million, 10 million, 9 million, 8 million. Some of the differences are there, but intriguing to say the least. So starting with the repeat at number one, Civil War, making $11.2 million over the weekend. Right now, it is faring pretty well in the numbers as of the 25th. It is within less of $1 million of its budget domestically, sitting at 49.1 domestic and about 15.3 internationally. So it's faring okay right now. 64.5 million worldwide. Obviously, this has got to be big for A24, considering the landscape at this point. And, you know, I'm not sure if this will be a profit-making film. If it is, it'll probably make a little bit. But otherwise, this should catch on whenever this hits streaming and DVD. That's something I would actually be curious about, if this is one of those movies that sells a bunch of copies, even though we're in an era full of streaming and all that. Number two, $10.2 million for a new release called Abigail. Actually, I'm kind of curious about the budget for that film. This is another one of those horror movies from Universal. So far, doing okay. 13.5 domestic and 4.8 internationally. Actually, take a look at the budget. Abigail budget. Ouch. 28 million. Actually, going to look at some of the other stuff here. This is according to Variety. They were aiming for 12 to 15 million from 3,300 feet. Actually, numbers, certainly interesting. Let's see. They're the number four spot I'll definitely talk about very soon, but number three, Godzilla and Kong, New Empire, 9.5 million. Continuing to do okay. 174.4 domestic, 315.1 internationally. Should, within a couple weeks, if not this weekend, make $500 million. I mean, the numbers don't lie. I mean, they're doing fairly okay. And this came out at the end of March, Easter weekend. Number four, another new release, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare at 8.9 million. And I think I just caught a glimpse of that film's budget, too. Take a brief look. Let's see, where is shaping up to be another misfire for Guy Ritchie. The last couple films he's done were duds. Yeah. Oof. 60 million supposedly for that. Yeah. 11.5 domestic and $467,000. So, yeah, that looks to me like it's going to be a failure. There's no sugarcoating the last few films of Guy Ritchie. They just haven't fared all that well. Find that pretty crazy. But yeah, will definitely be a flop. Number five, from Crunchyroll, a new release, Spy X Family Code, White. 4.8 million over the weekend. 5.9 domestic, but it's doing really well internationally. 46.9, nearing 47 million, so it's nearing 53 million. Overall, this is probably one of those films that probably has already made its budget in terms of anime-type stuff. I mean, that's what we've been seeing more and more of. At least that's how I see it. Number six, Kung Fu Panda 4. 4.6 million over the weekend. And the numbers around 181.4 domestic and 301.4 internationally. I don't know if it has enough to make it to 500 million, but it'll come pretty close if it doesn't. Can't imagine this. Actually, you know, I take that back. It'll be lucky if it even makes like 490 million. Still, this should be pretty happy for both DreamWorks and Universal. Actually, I just want to look at that for a brief moment. See how many other... Three of the top 10 are Universal movies. Number 7, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. 4.4 million over the weekend. 104.1 domestic and 73.4 internationally. Okay, I gotta double check the numbers for what Afterlife did. This is something I definitely want to keep an eye on a little bit, because I know the movie did well, but just want to double check to see how. Okay. So domestically, 129 million with a 74.9, so 204 million altogether, 129 and 74. The reason why that interests me more and more is because it's still pulling in decent numbers for the most part. It's just the domestic ain't anything to write home about. I think people want to see maybe something a little more, I don't know, proper in terms of Ghostbusters, or at least something that felt in line with it, if I had to guess. I'll definitely speak my thoughts on the movie at the end of the year and starting 2025, because thinking about it now, there definitely are some issues that I would certainly address, and listening to some other perspectives, I'd say Afterlife's the better movie. Number 8, Dune Part 2, 2.9 million, 277.7 domestic, and 420 million internationally. A few million shy of 700 million. More than likely, this is probably on maybe like exclusive form of streaming, if I had to guess. But still, Warner Brothers should be pretty happy, and no doubt that'll probably be a part 3. Number 9, Monkey Man, 2.2 million over the weekend. 22.7 domestic and 7.1 internationally. No doubt this is hugely disappointing. And rounding out the top 10 is the first Omen at 1.7 over the weekend. It's made its budget combining the worldwide numbers, but 18.5 million domestic and 27.3 internationally. And the budget is at $30 million, last I remember reading. And I'm definitely going to talk Disney a little bit on some of their movies potentially maybe having higher budgets than what they might be telling people. Or at least that's according to stuff on Forbes and a couple other, like one or two other places. So what's coming out? So what is out, to be specific? So quite a bit of movies. Limited releases include We 12, Humaine, Cinderella's Revenge, Nowhere Special, Boy Kills World, Breathe, and Bloodline Killer. Wide releases include Challengers, the re-release of Alien, which in 5 years will be 50 years old, Unsung Hero, and The Mummy, re-releasing as I believe the 25th anniversary of the movie, I believe. So yeah, that should be interesting. Not really anything too big. In terms of anything new, I'd imagine Challengers would be number one, unless the numbers are that low for it. We'll look at Unsung Hero for a minute. This is a 9.2 on IMDb so far. So, actually, based on a remarkable true story, a mum's faith stands against all odds and inspires her husband and children to hold on to theirs. Huh. Not really any names that I see on here that were 7.9. Is that like a Metacritic thing? Must not be updated. But yeah, I can't imagine anything else really. I mean, unless Civil War finds a way to win for a third weekend, I'd imagine probably challengers being number one so far, reviewing pretty well as of what we see here. And obviously you got the big name of Zendaya, and yeah, probably the biggest name in terms of women right now for movies. Other notables include a re-release of Spirited Away, which is from Studio Ghibli, for Studio Ghibli Fest 2024. And nothing coming out until the second with Jeanne du Barry, which is a limited release. The life of Jenny Bicou, who was born as the illegitimate daughter of an impoverished seamstress in 1743 and went on to rise to the court of Louis XV to become his last official mistress. Another one of those Fathom event films. Definitely a lot of big stuff coming out next week, which includes The Fall Guy, which I'm definitely seeing a fair share of advertising for. Tarot, which another one that's getting some getting a fair share of advertising. Let's see what else. Thabo and the Rhino Case, Wildcat, and is that Nowhere? Okay, Nowhere Special getting a bigger release next week. Some limited releases include Evil Does Not Exist, I Saw the TV Glow, The Roundup, Punishment, New Life, and the 25th anniversary re-release of Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Now, the speculation going on right now is there was an article on Forbes from this lady, Caroline Reed, and she put out an article on some of the stuff that might be going on with Disney. And one of her articles was about, and this was last week actually, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which made about $470 million altogether in terms of a worldwide gross, which was hugely disappointing. This was supposed to be one of the bigger movies for Marvel and Disney in 2023. But it flopped, and with a $200 million budget, this was a disaster. But that might be an even bigger disaster, because the numbers in her title, in the title of the article, set to blow its budget as costs surge to nearly $330 million. I'm sure a lot of it, I heard, like, it was mostly like a CGI film, a lot of effects that didn't look all that good. Disney really expects that last year's Marvel superhero movie to end up over budget after it spent $131.9 on post-production in 2022, bringing total cost to $326. Trying to look for... Looks like... I don't know if they'll be working with Jonathan Majors, but nearly avoided jail time earlier this month after being convicted of assaulting his ex-girlfriend. Quantum Realm set majority of the movie set in there, which increased post-production workload after. So this was well over a year after the movie wrapped up. Industrial Light and Magic created the film's psychedelic visuals, and this sent the cost soaring far beyond the 194. Okay, so this was okay before the post-production, nearly 200 million. That's still, and filming as we revealed last year in the Daily Mail. This is, well, it's hard to tell from the film. Made in the Magic United Kingdom had a magic touch on its finances. So this is what's saying. Studios filming in the UK benefit from its audiovisual expenditure credit, which gives them a cash reimbursement of up to 25.5% of the money they spend on the country, in the country. Government slightly raised the reimbursement ceiling by 0.5 percentage points in the face of competition from other countries, which are offering similar schemes. UK Dream Ticket. And a lot of people do film in the UK. I mean, that's one of the things. Movie budgets are usually a closely guarded secret, as studios tend to absorb the cost of individual films and their overall expenses and don't itemize the cost of each film. Films shot in the UK are exceptions to the rule. Shows must pass a points test based on factors such as how many members of the production team from the UK, how much post-production. So it just sounds like we don't fully know how expensive this movie is. And who knows if other Disney movies have filmed or done production work over in the UK. And who knows if they've spent way more on some of their movies than initially reported. Because outside of Guardians of the Galaxy 3, I don't think any of their movies made any sort of profit. The next closest I can think of is maybe The Little Mermaid. But if the budget is not what it says it is, although there's not anybody talking about that, but if it's higher than 250 million, then there's no way that movie made any sort of profit. Disney had probably one of their worst years ever. And they spent probably, I wouldn't be surprised if they spent 2 to 3 billion on these movies that came out last year and probably didn't make any like small little profit. Makes you wonder like if what they're doing is even sustainable. You know what? I want to see what the budget is for the new Deadpool movie. The first one, first two were both done under Fox. The first one was a $60 million movie. And I believe they doubled that for the second movie. I want to see what the budget is for that movie. Just trying to look. Just trying to find something here. Redoing. Just want to look. Just want to look. I'm not finding anything. But I wouldn't be surprised if the movie's over 100 million. I'd imagine it will be. I can't imagine them spending 200 million though. And that's going to be one of the big questions I think of when Joker 2 comes out. Well, was it necessary to have a $200 million budget? Especially when the first one was like a $60 million movie? There better be a good excuse as to why they needed that much money. And I'm serious when I say that. Oh, man. I got no comment after this. All right. So, moving to sports. Obviously, the NFL draft is going on this weekend. I'm just going to do the first round and speak my thoughts on it. But I do think the early picks are not anything surprising. I really think they're probably in the right spots and whatnot. So going to the first round, Chicago picking Caleb Williams, quarterback. Actually, the first three picks are quarterbacks. Caleb Williams to Chicago. This is going to be another guy that probably will falter with the Bears. Just the Bears have never really had a quarterback last that long. Some exceptions, obviously, like Jim McMahon and Jay Cutler, but otherwise, I just have a tough time thinking that this is going to work. I really think it's going to be a struggle. And quite frankly, I could see the same thing for Jaden Daniels being selected by Washington. They're kind of iffy here and there, Washington, in terms of quarterbacks. They've had good QBs over the years, but not anything that makes you say they're good at drafting ones. You got your duds like Heath Shuler and Dwayne Haskins. Then you got guys that do okay, you know, decent or good, like a Jason Campbell or Kirk Cousins, for example. Drake May to New England, not a surprise. They're looking for someone, and obviously the people they have there are just not going to cut it. With a new coaching crew around, maybe this is the guy that turns things around and does what Mac Jones did a few years ago. That's at least how you hope to see that with the Pats. Marvin Harrison Jr. to Arizona. I would like to think that's a good pick. And that's hoping that the quarterback situation is settled and that Kyler Murray plays the whole season. This guy could be as good as an Anquan Boldin or a Larry Fitzgerald, but let's see how that goes. Joe Alt, lineman to the LA Chargers. Definitely need some guys to protect. I mean, for sure. Seemed like their run game just wasn't all that great, and Herbert definitely took a few licks. And obviously that ended his season. Malik Nabers to the New York Giants. Definitely need a big receiver. Hopefully this guy becomes one of their bigger answers. And J.C. Latham, lineman to Tennessee. Definitely going to do whatever they can to protect, whether it's someone like a Will Levis or whatnot. This next one's interesting. A Michael Penix Jr. to Atlanta. I don't know if I would feel comfortable about it. The only reason I think they probably drafted him is because basically insurance, just in case Kirk Cousins goes down. And speaking of that, I think there's potential tampering stuff that might result in Philadelphia and Atlanta losing their picks next year. So definitely keep your eye on that. Number 9, Chicago with Rome Odunze, wide receiver that basically, you know, they're going to do whatever they can offensively. They got a really good defense here and there that is capable of being really good, but just a matter also at the same time, can they complement Williams? And that to me is going to be a big question. Number 10, J.J. McCarthy to Minnesota. They definitely need someone. I guess I don't know if he'd be pegged to be the number one starter come week one. Definitely needs to earn it. Minnesota's just one of those teams that just, they don't have a good quarterback situation over the years. The last time I could think of like a quarterback that lasted that long, probably Tommy Kramer. Because you had McMahon there for a couple of years. Warren Moon was there for a few years. Brad Johnson, I believe, was there. Rich Gannon. Randall Cunningham for a couple of years. Dante Culpepper. I don't even know who they had in the mid-2000s, if I'm being honest. Tarvarius Jackson. Another one. Brett Favre. Christian Ponder. Teddy Bridgewater. Honestly, if it wasn't for that knee injury, he probably would still be playing for the Vikes. Oyuv Fashanu, lineman to the Jets. Definitely doing whatever they can to protect Aaron Rodgers and whoever else becomes the next signal caller when Rodgers is out. That should be interesting to look at. Denver getting Bo Nix. There must be something Sean Payton likes in him, so who knows what that situation entails. But I can't imagine Denver having a good year. Raiders getting tight end Brock Bowers. I don't know if a tight end is what the Raiders need, but if it whoever that they have as their signal caller, if they think it'll be beneficial to the run game, the blocking, and hopefully the passing game, so be it. Talese Fuaga to New Orleans, definitely an interesting pick for sure, but definitely to protect, you know, Derek Carr and help the run game a bit more. Leatu Latu, edge rusher to Indianapolis. I don't know if that's someone I would pick, but definitely gonna get some guys defensively. Byron Murphy the second, defensive tackle for the Seahawks. Definitely need to help him out a bit more. Dallas Turner, edge rusher to Minnesota. Fix the problems on both sides of the ball. That's not too bad for a first round. Amarius Mims, lineman to Cincinnati. That, I'm guessing, just make sure that Joe Burrow gets a lot more protection. I'd be curious to see how that does, especially considering that they don't really have anything too big at running back, for the time being at least. Jared Verse, edge rusher to the LA Rams. Gotta find someone to replace the great Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald should definitely be a Hall of Famer. Absolutely a Hall of Famer. Troy Fontanu, lineman to Pittsburgh. What can I say? They're going to pull out all the strings to make sure, whether it's Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, make sure that they're being protected and that there isn't any major injury setbacks or the pressure gets to the quarterbacks. Chop Robinson, edge rusher to Miami. I don't know. It probably would help Miami a little bit in terms of not being inconsistent. That was a they just struggle mightily, and there's definitely some issues that need to be addressed on both sides. Quinyon Mitchell, corner to Philadelphia. They're not getting young there, that secondary. Definitely getting some young blood in there for sure. Brian Thomas Jr. to Jacksonville. Another guy that should complement Trevor Lawrence. So that should fill in a void a little bit with Calvin Ridley being gone. Terrion Arnold, corner to Detroit. Why not? I think they got enough pieces on offense. Definitely focus on the defense a little bit, especially considering that they put in some big contracts for Amon-Ra St. Brown and Penei Sewell. Jordan Morgan, lineman to Green Bay. Definitely lost some guys during free agency, so it'll be interesting to see how protected Jordan Love will be heading into his second year as a starter. Graham Barton's lineman sent to Tampa Bay. I think they just lost their guy to retirement. Definitely had some health issues for sure. But hey, hopefully him and Baker Mayfield are good together. Probably be some growing pains to begin the season, but should be like a well-oiled machine by the end of the season. Darius Robinson, edge rusher to Arizona. Sure, why not? Xavier Worthy, definitely need a big receiver there for the Chiefs. Had to happen. Dallas getting Tyler Guyton. That's one of their bigger problems. I mean, just that offensive line. Some of them getting a little older. Definitely need someone that's a little younger compared to what they had. What was it, Jason Peters last year? Tyron Smith, I don't think, was healthy throughout the year either. Nate Wiggins, corner to Baltimore. Sure. Ricky Pearsall, receiver to San Francisco. There's some questions going on with Brandon Ayuk, according to multiple sports websites. Whether or not Ayuk goes somewhere else, there's speculation that he could be on his way to, I think maybe Pittsburgh. That to me would be interesting, but this is according to a couple websites, Bleacher Report, CBS Sports. Potentially Deebo Samuel could be on the chopping block a little bit too. I know he hasn't been the same the last year or so, but definitely some good value if you want to utilize Samuel as a whole. Oh, nope. According to Bleacher Report, rejects trade calls amid... Okay, it's draft-type stuff with probably Lynch thinking that, what? They think I'm disappointed with the guys? I mean, if there is rumors on it, I don't know why you would want to get rid of him. He probably had, I want to say he had his best year to date. 75 catches, 1,300 yards, 7 scores. Like, he's moving up the ladder. But maybe there's something they like that will help Brock Purdy and maybe alleviate some of the pressure off of Ayuk and Samuel. And Xavier Leggett, receiver to Carolina. Definitely need a true number one guy. Adam Thielen is not the answer. Good receiver, though, by the way, Thielen. just there's a lot of problems with Carolina that has to be addressed. I don't know. I don't know if a receiver is something that I would have picked. The season should be fascinating, and the draft as well. So, moving to baseball, teams getting into a groove, some struggling, obviously. But then you've got one of the crazier ejections that occurred. And this was, I believe, on the 22nd, where Hunter Wendelstedt threw out Yankee manager Aaron Boone over something that Boone didn't do. So to give some context and get a look on multiple videos on YouTube, and the audio from the YES Network, you will hear it pretty good. So it all started with a hit by pitch that Boone tried to argue that he swung, the S.R.A. Ruiz swung. For those who may not get the grasp of it, if you swing despite getting hit by a pitch, it is a strike. No matter what, it is a strike. And the first base umpire believed that he didn't swing, so it was a hit by pitch. Boone tried to argue, and Wendelstedt, who was behind the home plate, issued a warning, but also said, no more or you're done or something like that. Pretty much kind of like an ultimatum type thing. Like one, I was listening to a video online actually not too long ago hearing about all this, and basically if you are issuing an ultimatum with like one more word or you're done, does not look good on the umpires. Because it makes them look like petty jackasses. And the YES Network cameras actually got a good view of what was basically a fan in a blue shirt heckling and going after Wendelstedt. And Wendelstedt threw out Boone. And Boone was not doing anything. He had his mouth shut, and when he got ejected, it was like, what? And argued his case to Wendelstedt, and the bench coach, Brad Osmus, you'll get a look at it if you look at the videos online, Osmus pointing out to the fan and Boone pleading his case, but the umpire was like, I don't care, you're out. Now, you can throw out fans from games. And one of the things that came to my mind a little bit was Bob Davidson. Bob Davidson threw out a fan. Yeah, this was in 2016, a game between Philadelphia and San Francisco. Philly's fake. This is from SB Nation, The Good Fight. A Phillies fan heckling the umpire crew was singled out by home plate umpire Bob Davidson last night. Not something you see every day. Yeah, basically, Walked to the visiting dugout, ejected a loudmouth Phillies fan. I mean, if it gets to the point where it's so obnoxious, yeah, I wouldn't blame the guy. According to ejected the fan for heckling Yadier Molina in 2010. Oh, he was the guy that, because there was something I saw, a mascot, Yuppie. I think this was the Montreal Expos. I gotta look at that again. Yuppie gets ejected. Yeah, the Expos mascot, because I think Tommy Lasorda was upset or like frustrated at the mascot dancing on their dugout, which, I mean, it's a little obnoxious, I mean, to be fair, but Davidson threw out the mascot. If you ever get a chance to, there's a video, I think it's Daytona Cubs. There was a guy that was running sound. Let's see if this is based out of Florida or Ohio. Yep. Minor league team of the Florida State League, single A affiliate of the. They must have been with the Cubs for a long time. Now they're a Reds affiliate. Or they're actually called the Daytona Tortugas. Tortugas. So, Daytona. Daytona Cubs 3 blind, because the guy, the music guy, yeah, this was in August of 2012. Umpire's ejection of an intern DJ playing a sound clip of the nursery rhyme 3 blind mice. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. They unfold in the visitors' eighth inning after Fort Myers' miracle batter Ely was ruled safe to first base by field umpire Ramon Hernandez. The Cubs manager exited the dugout to argue the call. As home plate umpire Mario Seneca stood at the dish waiting for Harper and Hernandez to conclude their discussion. Derek Dye attempted to entertain the crowd while poking fun at the umpires. Yeah. And basically got ejected from the game. They turned the sound off the rest of the night. To that original point, though, to get to what I'm saying, fans can get ejected. People can get ejected in the stands from the game. But Boone did not like it, obviously. And, unfortunately, it is what it is. I'm sure pretty embarrassed by that. And, yeah, it's saying it did not look, it's not good. And of course, it isn't, because you have an umpiring problem. And not just an umpiring problem, officiating problem across all the sports. And this is something that has become more and more problematic as the years have gone by. Talking last week about Angel Hernandez, just going briefly to that, he's basically untouchable because of a couple things. One, the umpires union, which means he'll be doing his job still despite the mediocrity of his officiating and calls. And the other being that He sued for racial discrimination, which he lost, but what if he did that again? You can't rule that out with other umpires. There might be some that will be absolutely bitter about the whole situation. I'm just being blunt about the whole thing, and they did, MLB did say that, according to Boone, across, like New York Post, awful announce, well, Bleacher Report, that Wendell Stett will get punished. And that's saying something a bit. And Wendell Stett is kind of a legacy umpire because his father, to the best of my knowledge, was an umpire himself from the mid 60s through the 90s. And Hunter has been doing it since 2000. So, it obviously this looks bad on Hunter, and this will impact them because I was watching a video online of the whole thing, and they talked about this guy Dan Bellino, who had a bad ejection against Madison Bumgarner in 2022, and that did not help his case for being in the postseason as a umpire. This could have that same type of repercussions for Hunter Wendelstedt, because you make bad calls like that, and this was in the first inning, by the way, for this game between Oakland and New York. If he can't keep his composure for that, how is he going to keep his composure if something bad happens during a postseason game or even something like the All-Star game? They're not going to reward him for bad behavior, although they do that with some other umpires, unfortunately. But yeah, definitely one of the crazier ejections that you'll ever see. NASCAR had their race at Talladega, excuse me. And definitely a crazy race, especially with some of the crashes there. Tyler Reddick won the race. Top 10 as follows: Brad Keselowski, another strong second place finish. Noah Gragson, impressive third place finish. Ricky Stenhouse, fourth. Alex Bowman, fifth. Okay, I gotta figure out this. Anthony Alfredo, sixth place. William Byron, seventh. Todd Gilliland, eighth. Daniel Hemric, ninth. And Harrison Burton, a good 10th place finish. Other notables include Chase Briscoe, 12th, Martin Truex, 11th, Ross Chastain, 13th, Chase Elliott, 15th, Josh Berry, 16th, Joey Logano, 19th, Ryan Blaney, 20th, Kyle Larson, 21st, Ty Gibbs, 22nd, Austin Cindric, 23rd, Chris Buescher, 25th, Daniel Suarez, 26th, Kyle Busch, 27th, Austin Dillon, 30th, Michael McDowell, 31st, John Hunter Nemechek, 33rd, Eric Jones, 35th, Bubba Wallace, 36th, Denny Hamlin, 37th, and Christopher Bell, 38th. That's a name I actually want to look at for a second. Eric Jones, because I believe he got hurt in that race, and he had a pretty bad vicious impact outside wall during a draft. Oh my. Oh. I'm gonna say Eric Jones probably just had the same type of situation that happened with that happened to Eric Almirola. Almirola 2017 had a very vicious crash. Unfortunate victim of circumstances, when he crashed into Joey Logano and Danica Patrick, he got hurt. He got hurt pretty badly, and that's why Bubba Wallace is even racing. Given a test run in 2017, and that's why Bubba's been racing full time for 6+ seasons and counting. Gen Car 7 is stiffer. This is from On3.com. During the car, the first 2 years, Harvick learned a lot. More crushable and actually improved the safety. Different and worse could be. So this is according to, this is the Happy Hour podcast of his. Spinal fracture. Oof. You hope that's not something that leaves him paralyzed. Those cars, when they get up in the air like that and slam back into the ground, it feels like someone takes a punch and hammers it right through your spine. Harvick said, "It is violent. Eric Jones's hit was violent. It blew the air cleaner off, blew the hood off. I think that he was definitely over 160 miles an hour, so I would say, if not more, when he hit the fence like that. And those right angles and hits like that are just really tough. With this Gen 7 car, they are just much more violent. Concussions, large concern." Yeah, I mean, that's why Kurt Busch ain't even racing anymore, and why he hasn't raced in almost 2 years. Concussions pretty much ended his career. I mean, they're trying to make things safer, but, I mean, this is going to be, I mean, kind of an acid test to see, does anyone else suffer any really bad injuries or worse? I mean, will we unfortunately see our first death in the Cup Series since Dale Earnhardt? I mean, that's not a thought I want to have. If someone has a bad crash like that, could the potential of someone dying come back? That's something that I would be very scared of. That's something I think a lot of these drivers should be scared about. Their wives, girlfriends, families, parents, doesn't matter. I mean, they do this stuff for a living. They are aware of the dangers, but there comes a point where you say, is this even worth it? Because that to me is going to be the big question. NBA going with their playoffs, as is the NHL. Right now, Minnesota going to probably win game three with a big win. Dallas going strong, 2-1 series over the LA Clippers right now. Indiana with a surprising 2-1 lead following an overtime victory against Milwaukee. I know the New York Knicks, Sixers, Knicks are leading 2-1. Lakers blowing games, and the Denver Nuggets are at 3-0. I think Cleveland's actually doing pretty well themselves against Orlando. Be curious to see what happens with the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics, because that was an interesting matchup. Even series right now, that plays in the evening. NHL looking pretty interesting too, considering game's about to end, but Edmonton Oilers beating up on the LA Kings. Colorado having a pretty good 2-1 series lead over the Winnipeg Jets. Vancouver 2-1 series over Nashville. I know the New York Rangers are 3-0 right now against the Capitals. Islanders losing in a series right now, 3-0 series. Carolina Hurricanes over them. Florida Panthers 3-0 over Tampa Bay. I mean, some of these guys are going to be well rested. Some of them to be hugely rested by the time the second round comes about. Not sure if they would like it though. But you're not going to feel black and blue as much compared to if you played like six or seven games. Moving lastly to gaming. Just going to talk some Nintendo stuff. Beginning with Super Smash Bros. Now, this is a series that came out actually around this time here in the United States in at the end of April 1999, and it was a surprise hit in Japan when it came out at the start of the year. It was one of those projects that was kind of an underground type of game. Nobody really knew about it, or it was kind of like a game that you weren't sure on what it was going to be and if people would like it or not, but it did very well in Japan. Got a big release in the later part of the year for the United States and Europe, and huge deal. Huge deal. The idea, I mean, it's just the concept is awesome and brilliant at the same time. Nintendo characters fighting against each other in areas inspired by their respective franchises. Various weapons, whether it's fire flowers and Pokeballs, using stuff like tomatoes to heal yourself, a damage system that is based on how much you can sustain and the pros and cons of each character. Some people might not be able to withstand much damage. Some can able to take a bunch of hits and not be flying off the screen, like Donkey Kong, for example. Four-player mayhem. That, to me, is probably the big selling point. The ability to play with up to four people, play as various characters, a small lineup, actually, now that I think about it, 12 characters, 8 from the get-go. You unlock the others in specific ways through the single player. Single player is pretty shallow. It's bare bones. There's still some stuff that be had with it, but a lot of the game hinges on whether or not you're going to play a lot of the single player or not. And that, to me, is what it will hinge on. To me, it doesn't have the same type of longevity compared to playing a Mario Kart or a GoldenEye, for example, where they both had solid single player and multiplayer experiences. Although it has spawned a franchise that has created its fair share of entitled fans, toxicity. And it's a shame because, I mean, this is a series that has a lot going for it, and the concept, hasn't changed greatly since the first game. And why shouldn't it? As long as it finds ways to refine gameplay and things like that. Although I would say I like the Wii game Brawl. I played a little bit of the one of Smash Bros. 4. Don't care much for Melee. I've heard good stuff about Ultimate. So, I mean, it's cool to see a franchise that originated from the Nintendo 64, still be around 25 years later. One of the negatives I'll talk about, though, is there is a game called Jerry's Mod, or whatever. And it's one of those games that has a huge modding community. And supposedly, one of the things going on is that there is someone potentially, according to multiple websites, posing as Nintendo and demanding, like, issuing, like, a cease and desist to anything that involves, like, Nintendo content on the game. So, This is something I heard about a while ago. Confirmed that there is no mistake, Nintendo issued the major takedown notice. So, yeah, this was legit. There's a lot of question on whether it was legit or not. Verified and all that. I'll definitely talk about that in a brief second. Possibly by an impersonator. I don't know whether. But if the creator. Yeah, this is just. I understand protecting their IPs to a point, but this is just getting to the point where it's. I mean, this is. I hate to compare it to real atrocities going on, but Nintendo is just basically a dictatorship when it comes to this stuff. I mean, this is a game that's been going around for many years, and I don't get why they would go after it now. Truth be told, this is from TechDirt.com. I don't know. It's hard to really tell. I'm just the reason why I'm being silent is because I don't know whether some of this is legitimately true or not. And that to me is okay, so yeah, DMCA lawyers of that's just crappy. This is why people this is why I don't feel bad for Nintendo at times. It's like there's protecting your IP, and then there's going way overboard to ensure that no one has fun with anything else. I get it, they are within their rights to go after this stuff, but it's just over something from a game from like long ago. Their approach to everything has to be like a my way or the highway approach, and this is part of the latest line of seeing them be absolute scumbags about stuff not appearing on stuff that they're involved in, and that's a shame. It really is a huge shame. And the way they do things at times, like it makes you wonder. It's like, do they have any inkling as to what is truly going on? User-generated content, it's just. Actually, this stuff has been going on for a while. Okay, so this is something that probably was issued early in the year, and this is from Wired.com, by the way. Yeah. The company goes after pretty much anything. I mean, some of them are going to archive it. New add-ons have been appearing, saying like F Nintendo, Nintendo Office. It's unclear whether these new. I think it's frustrating because I think it absolutely is frustrating because people are tired of them going full nuclear on this stuff. And, as I said before, yeah, they're within their rights to do this stuff, but is it necessary to go after every little thing? This is one of the reasons why I think people get tired of how they do things, and just thinking that with emulation, it's like I would understand if people were doing stuff with the Switch. That I would get. But people playing a Game Boy game that probably will never see a re-release, and they would still throw a fit over it. Because they're not. Like, the money's not going anywhere. It's not going to the developers. It's not going to the publishers. It's not going to Nintendo. What harm is that going to create? It doesn't matter if it's something that gets put on Virtual Console or re-released on a modern Nintendo platform or not. I don't think it's really going to make any money whatsoever. It's not going to be something that generates record profits that comes from, I think, Switch hardware and obviously new Switch software. I know other companies are like that too, but not to the level of Nintendo, and that's part of why they don't get the type of love that maybe so few other companies get. And, it's a shame to talk about it because they do good stuff, but there's also the dark side of this company. And one of these days, I mean, it's gonna come back. I mean, they're not gonna be able to fight everything. I mean, and eventually, they're not gonna be able to. What's the right word? I can't say. I don't know what else really to say. It's just frustrating. That's all I'm gonna say. So I'll end this episode here. As I said before, this podcast is on podcasters.spotify.com. You can also find this on Radio Public and Google Podcasts. So head on down to those places, search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits. So that is episode 192. This is Ryan Sullivan. Hope to hear your listeners on the next podcast. Stay safe, stay protected, take care of yourself, take care, everyone.